Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. And now, our feature presentation.
The Beginning, Omaha, Nebraska, November 1896. Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner was a most striking man. Not handsome, but fascinating all the same, in the most abstract sense of the word. His countenance came equipped with a head of prematurely gray hair that flowed down to his shoulders, a mouthful of strong white teeth, and a long, thin face with inquisitive bright blue eyes set below an imposingly high forehead. Tall and lanky, his very being vibrated with that special inner glow that marked men of potential greatness. Dr. Tanner was one of those gifted few who seemed to literally shoot off sparks while thinking, and that was most of the time, since his mind was always working. Indeed, his most attractive attribute lay below the surface. Tanner's most notable feature was the brilliant brain encased in his skull, a mass of tissue containing more education and raw knowledge than any 10 of his academic contemporaries. He held 2 degrees by the age of 25, a doctorate of science from Harvard, and a doctorate of philosophy from Oxford University in England, along with dozens of other diplomas, honors, awards, and accolades. He'd given up framing and hanging them long ago, choosing to let the proof of his many accomplishments rest unattended within a wooden cedar chest in his attic. A vain man could have covered 4 walls with the prizes of his profession, but Tanner wasn't a vain man. Pompous at times, but never vain. He was much too practical for vanity. Emily Chandler considered herself lucky to have caught him, and she loved her man with all her heart and soul. The woman was gorgeous, a vision in subtle beauty. The skin of her heart-shaped face was creamy white, her flawless complexion the perfect backdrop for her dark eyes and long auburn hair. And she was always smiling, a small hidden grin that played on her lips, as if she were finding joy from her own private amusements. To the average man of the period, she might have come across as threatening, her shining intelligence inescapable despite her feminine beauty. Seen from afar, while exiting a Harvard campus library one spring afternoon by a yearning Theo Tanner, she was utterly desirable. When the good Mr. Tanner had opportunity to address a gathering of female students a few weeks later, he gleefully said he opposed the idea that women should ever be allowed to vote in order to raise her ire and gain her attentions. He found that having her spend many late hours trying to persuade him of his folly to be a much easier way of meeting her than going right up and asking her to accompany him out to dinner or a show. During his younger days of intense study and teaching, he was a gangly 20-year-old intent on mastering the universe. 1 hour with Emily Chandler, and he knew he had at last found something he coveted even more than knowledge, for Theo Tanner had never been in love before. He'd never made the time for romance, spending his years striving to better himself, to understand the world and its surroundings, to read, to seek, to know. His quest for knowledge was tempered with caution, hence his twin majors of study and expertise. Now, at the age of 28, he was perched on the cusp of true happiness. In 4 more years, he'd be present at the turn of the century, and he was only beginning to guess at the marvels the future would bring. Still, daring to venture beyond the mortal coils of the known into the great unknown was the mission of any worthy scientist. But having the proper moral code to know what to do with your discoveries was another matter. That was why he had double majored, taking his 2nd degree in philosophy, staying up all hours of the night and always reading, learning, cramming his already stuffed mind with even more information. He was constantly talking out loud to himself, a habit from childhood he'd never managed to break, or repeating the words he was reading over and over, ingraining them in his memory for future use, whether on exams or in the real world. Once he learned something, Theo Tanner didn't forget. The family made a point of taking a daily walk, either before he left to go to his morning classes, or after Tanner returned home in the afternoon from the university. The air was good for the children and allowed the family a chance to exercise and share pleasantries with their fellow citizens as they strolled the sidewalks surrounding their cozy two-story home. In these early months of winter, Emily would bundle up young Julian and place him inside the carriage, while Tanner assisted Rachel in buttoning her coat and wrapping the child's long red scarf around her delicate neck. Then the front door would be thrown open, and away the family would go. Tanner was wearing his long overcoat with small golden buttons, belted snugly at his waist. A high collar and a cravat were held in place by a gleaming diamond pin. He carried a handsome ebony walking stick with a gold-plated tip and handle to match the buttons of his coat. His right arm was linked around Emily's slender limb. She wore her own long overcoat, which came down to her knees and fastened up primly and warmly to her neck. On her head was a wide-brimmed hat with a long cluster of white and gray feathers that bobbed on the left.
I say, Theophilus, hold up!
A stout man in a worn black wide hat and matching cloak was racing up behind them, calling out Tanner's name repeatedly as he came closer, the leather soles of his shoes slapping down on the wooden sidewalk.
Hello, Jonathan. Glad to see you out bettering your body this brisk morning.
The man in the hat and cloak came thudding to a stop.
Oh, better my body? I don't believe so. Whew.
I hope you are well, Mr. Nolan.
Ah, never better, dear Emily.
Jonathan Nolan then tipped his hat to the young girl next to her mother.
Good morning to you, Miss Rachel.
Hello.
The girl was embarrassed at the direct attention. She turned shyly and averted her eyes to look across the street. A horse-drawn carriage clattered up and came to a stop at the curb. Rachel loved horses, and she admired the creature as it waited patiently for the passenger in the carriage to step down, pay the driver's fare, and then depart.
What can we do for you, Jonathan? Working on another scientific article for your newspaper? I would be glad to proof it for you this evening at home after our supper. Anything for a man trying to enlighten his readers. No time right now, I'm afraid, unless you want to loan me a copy to take along.
No article this time, actually. But as always, you shall be the first I contact for a quote or to check facts. I just came from Martin's Books, and he mentioned the book you ordered had arrived. First edition of Houseman's A Shropshire Lad?
Tanner looked puzzled.
I must confess, Jonathan, that while I have long coveted such a volume, I had placed no such order. Martin must be in error.
No, Theo, he is not. I placed the order. I know you frequent Page's bookstore, and I tried another in the hopes of avoiding your discovery of my surprise. The book was to have been for Christmas.
Nolan blushed with embarrassment.
Oh, dash it all. I am terribly sorry. I can...
It took a few seconds before Tanner realized the sound was coming from his daughter. A second after his realization, the child gripped his hand with bone-crushing force. Julian, his sleep disrupted, also began to wail from the confines of his baby carriage.
Rachel, what is it, child? What?
Tanner knelt to reach eye level with the girl. Her eyes were still looking out upon the empty street, the horse and carriage now long gone. He peered out, his eyes searching for what had upset her so, but saw nothing out of the ordinary. Nothing at all. Tanner then canceled his classes at the university for the day, choosing to stay at home with his daughter. He didn't press Rachel for an explanation, instead waiting for the girl to speak to him when she was ready. The day passed slowly, with Tanner trying to concentrate on a book, but failing miserably. Finally, much later that night, as he tucked his older child into bed, the youngster at last described what had frightened her on the sidewalk.
I saw something, Father, in the air.
Even at her young age, Rachel was her father's child, and her choice and usage of words were precise.
So what, dear child? A bird? Bat? Flying squirrel? What?
The air looked odd, like it was hot, and there was an eye in the middle of it.
An eye belonging to whom?
A big eye, Father. I think it was looking at me from heaven.
Even as his mind tried to process what his little girl was telling him, Tanner slipped easily into the patented parental know-it-all mode.
Then, child, if the eye was from heaven, there is no reason for you to be frightened. After all, logic dictates there is no reason to be scared if God is looking down at us.
You think so, Father?
I do.
Very well then, Father.
Rachel's memory of the magical eye had apparently already vanished into the depths of her young mind, after Tanner's reassurances.
Oh, good night.
Good night, child.
He kissed her softly on the forehead.